Hi, you're listening to another sermon from Deep Creek Anglican Church.
Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down their life for their friends. It's unusual to talk about love and death in the same sentence. I happened to hear a song the other day at the shops by Sam Smith called To Die For. And the point of the whole song is him saying, I want to feel so passionately about another person that I would want to die for them. I want someone to die for. But if we ask each other what it means to be loved, we usually don't speak of that. If we ask our kids, when they have to write something for Mother's Day or Father's Day at kindergarten, usually love is hugs, love is getting food, and love is about the lovely time that we spend at bedtime. My friend, a dear friend, Amanda, once realized that she had linked the saying of I love you with bedtime too much, when at one point during the day she said to her son, I love you, and he said, it's not bedtime. She realized that she needed to express it at other times of the day, and of course her actions already did so. When I think of the definition of love, I always think about the pouring out of yourself for the good of another, desiring the good of someone else, and so sacrifice or service, kindness, giving comes to mind. But it wasn't until recently that I saw an official definition of love which called it connection. Barbara Fredrickson, quoted in Brené Brown's The Atlas of the Heart, says this: love is the preoccupying and strong desire for further connection. The bonds people hold with a select few and the intimacy that grows between them. The commitments to loyalty and faithfulness. Connection. If we understand love to be not simply affection for another, not simply seeking the good of another, but a passion for connection, then we can start to understand why Jesus said, no greater love has someone than this. And then he died. John 3:16, perhaps one of the most famous Bible passages in the whole world, written on takeaway cups apparently in certain burger places in the US, on football players' faces and all kinds of things, says, God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever would believe in him shall not perish, but shall have eternal life. But so often when we hear John 3:16, or when we see Good Friday and hear Jesus say, I give myself for you, we sit in that transaction. We know that something's been given and we're to receive. And we suddenly think about the life with God and his love for us as something he has done rather than his great love for us, which motivated its doing. If you ask a parent what they want for their child, they always say, I just want them to be happy. But really what we mean is, I want them to know that they are loved. Happiness comes and goes. Why do we care for them? Why do we hug them? Why do we give? Why do we make food? Why do we tell them at bedtime and all the other times, I love you? We want them to know that they are loved. We don't really want them to remember each transaction we have given and they have received. We want them to know that they are loved. Because happiness comes and goes, but when you know you are loved, you can persevere in the hard times. You're not alone. You've got value. You matter. Your life is different. And yet we often think about our Christian faith. If you're a Christian here this morning, or perhaps you're looking in from the outside, as a transaction, or as something that confers upon us an obligation or a duty to live in a certain way. God gave, we receive, I better be better, life goes on. But in fact, Jesus says that this entire moment was about love, his love for you, his desire to be with you, his heart for connection with you. Perhaps we've put love aside because it seems to be so lacking in the world. As we grow, hugs and food only cover over so much. And we see terrible heartache. We don't know whether love actually makes a difference anymore. Bell Hooks wrote, "Everywhere we learn that love is important, and yet we are bombarded by its failure. In the realm of the political, among the religious, in our families, in our romantic lives, we see little indication that love informs decisions, strengthens our understanding of community, or, despite the song, keeps us together. This bleak picture in no way alters the nature of our longing. We still hope that love will prevail. We still believe in love's promise." It's not easy in the face of the failure of love in our world to keep that hope, to believe in that promise. But there was no one who faced that failure of love in the world more deeply and profoundly than Jesus. And yet he believed that love would prevail. Yet he believed that washing his disciples' feet in an act of love and humility so, well, let's be honest, so icky to us, so intimate that I'm happy to do communion here, but boy, if he'd made foot washing one of the sacraments, so challenging, so close, so humble. Jesus linked foot washing, the ultimate giving and sacrifice, to his death on the cross because it was for good, for love, for connection. The testimony of the Gospels is that Jesus was not only motivated by love on the cross, but everything in his life was loving. I chose that video and that moment between Jesus, Mary, and John on the cross because it's a tiny detail that the gospel writer included to show that this was not a transactional gesture. This was the work of one who was loving for the sake of love because he loved all. Every moment of his life was shaped by love and compassion. When we see the word compassion used in the scriptures, in the gospels, it describes all the things that Jesus did. If you've read one of the accounts of Jesus' life, you might know that he healed the sick, that he fed the hungry, that he raised the dead, that he healed the blind, and that he forgave sins. And in every one of the Gospels, these actions are described with the word compassion. When he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them. Jesus was indignant. He was moved with compassion, and so he reached out and touched the man with leprosy. Jesus taught because he had compassion, healed because he had compassion, fed, forgave, and loved. And so the Gospel of John puts love at the very center of his teaching, of his example, and of his death. If Jesus' death is about love, it is about connection. The cumulative testimony, Dane Ortlund writes, of the four Gospels is that when Jesus Christ sees the fallenness of the world all about him, his deepest impulse, his most natural instinct, is to move toward that sin and suffering, not away from it. It's very hard for you and I to move toward mess, toward brokenness, toward heartbreak, betrayal, violence, rejection, lies, neglect. We run, and of course we do. These are the things that break love. These are the things that undermine our hope in God's promise. But not Jesus. Jesus knew. Jesus sat around this table with his friends knowing that betrayal was coming, knowing that lies were being told, knowing that rejection and violence and ultimately death were ahead. And unlike us, he didn't move away. He moved toward. And not because he wanted betrayal and violence and rejection and lies and neglect and heartbreak. Of course not. He moved into that deepest, darkest moment because he wanted to move toward us. That's where we were, in the heart of darkness, pun intended. We were there in that mess, doing those things, feeling the pain of them. And instead of walking away, Jesus walked right into the middle of it because his love drove him toward us. When we feel betrayal, we fight, or we flee, or we freeze. Violence, rejection, lies, neglect, we fight. We flee, we freeze. But Jesus reached out. Jesus moved toward. Jesus absorbed all the betrayal and everything, not just against him, but against the Father, against all that God had made. And he said, if love can take this, if I can bear this, then you don't need to fight. You don't need to flee. You don't need to freeze. You can be connected once more. Love says, I want your good and I want to be with you. The cross says, I want your good. I want you to be forgiven. I want you to be released from darkness. I want you to be trapped no longer. And I want to be with you. I want to draw you out of your fight and flight and freeze And I want to connect you with a loving Father so that every moment you will know that you are loved. The war is over. Lay down your weapons. The war is over. Turn around. Come back. Receive his love. But no, wait, we say. You don't understand. I've really messed up in all kinds of ways. I know, he responds. Well, you know most of it, sure. Certainly more than what others see, but there's darkness down inside me that's hidden from everyone. I know it all. Well, the thing is, it isn't just my past, it's my present too. I understand. But I don't know if I can break free of this anytime soon. That's the only kind of person I'm here to help. The burden is heavy and heavier all the time. Then let me carry it. It's too much to bear. Not for me. You don't get it. My offenses aren't just directed towards others, they're against you. Then I am the one most suited to forgive them. But the more of the ugliness in me you discover, the sooner you'll get fed up with me. Whoever comes to me, I will never turn away. Greater love has no one than this, than to give their life for their friends. You are my friends. I no longer call you servants. You are my friends, and I love you. Good Friday is not a transaction. Good Friday is an invitation into love. It's the greatest expression of love, but more than that, it's the greatest call of love. Connect with me, says Jesus. Turn around. Come back. Receive my love. You are loved.